Unchurned is presented by Update AI.
With customer success, all of us want to just tell our clients how to do something, right? Because it would be so simple if we would just say, go do X, Y, and Z, and you'll get the most out of the product. But we can't do that. We have to perform this magic of inception. We have to get them to realize it's their own idea, and then they go and put it in place. And we have to not be offended when they get the credit for taking that idea and running with it. So it's about finding your champions. It's about planting the seeds early and often.
Where there's friction, there's also growth. But when you do, one of the things that I'm learning right now is when you do feel that empowerment to speak, when do you, how do you like balance where that change or friction can be implemented? It can't always just be tear down, tear down, tear down.
We teach people how to treat us. And that is true with customers in Slack.
When does this go live, Josh?
Wednesday.
When? So does my new podcast.
How amazing.
Oh my gosh, isn't that so crazy?
That's how we're starting this episode. Welcome everybody to Christy's new podcast. I mean, Unchurned, presented by Update AI, CSMBS, but just the precursor to Christy's new podcast. Christy, tell us all about your new podcast.
I'm so excited. So it's called She's So Sweet, because I had to make it a little cheeky. But Sweet is spelled S-U-I-T-E, and it's intended to just interview women in the C-suite, primarily in tech, but all different roles. So I've got folks in chief product officers, chief financial officers, CROs, CCOs. And so I'm really just trying to expand our visibility into how all of these wonderful women have gotten to where they are in their career. So it's really journey-focused storytelling. I get to ask them a bunch of questions, and selfishly, it's just an opportunity for me to learn from some of the industry's best. I actually have someone from John's organization teed up for the next couple of weeks from user testing, their chief product officer. I've got a great lineup of folks. I've got folks from Calendly on the schedule. I mean, it's just I've been really
all
amazed
C-suite.
At the
all C-suite, C-suite,
all
C-suite, right?
All C-suite. I even got the CEO of Hootsuite responded to me and gave me her comms email address. So we will see. I really shot for the stars with some of the folks I reached out to. Yamini, if you're listening, I tried to go straight to the top. I was like, that is my ungettable get. We'll see. Did not get a response yet.
From who?
So everyone knows her. Yamini from HubSpot.
Oh, for Yamini, yeah. She's the grand poopa of
CEO of HubSpot. Yes. So that's my ungettable get. So took a shot, sent a message. I'll definitely have to back channel and try to find somebody who can help me there. But so far so good. I'm launching with three awesome stories, three women in three different roles, different types of organizations, and then I've got a bunch coming over the next couple weeks.
I love the new title. We've been playing around with some new titles for my weekly posts and things like that. And we have sort of settled on Do Less with Jess, how to be productive in customer success land.
See, I think it's just fun when you have a fun title. I will actually say, John, Michelle responded to me because I love a good pun. She goes, I love a good pun, so this is great. She goes, the title alone. I'm like, yes. So nobody has thought it's terrible, the idea. So that's good.
Well, speaking of shooting for the stars, let's introduce our guest who's already introduced herself. She violated the rules, just like they always do on me. Yeah, John, you've been quiet this time, but you know that you're usually perpetrator number one on this. Anyways, I would like to introduce to everybody Update AI's new head of customer success and community. Yep. Jess Cohen.
Hi, folks. My name is Jess. I'm the new head of CS and community at Update AI. I joined earlier this year in January, so it's been a whopping 2 or 4 weeks, depending on when you start counting. And I'm super excited to be here today.
That's awesome.
They're making fun of me with the reach for the stars because I, like most children, wanted to be an astronaut when I grew up. However, I, unlike other children, didn't give up on that dream until I was 24 and basically I took a nerd camp class in astrophysics when I was 13. And while the astrophysics and the math was way over my head, didn't have any calculus yet, really couldn't do that, I fell in love with the story of the planets, the idea that Earth, Venus, and Mars basically follow the Goldilocks rule. One is too hot, one is too cold, and one is just right. One is too far, one is too close, and one is just right. And over like that. And I went home after that summer and said, this is what I want to study for the rest of my life. And I read everything that Carl Sagan had to write. And in particular, Carl Sagan, a little stuck in the 80s and 90s, and said that when we go back to the moon, and more importantly, when we go to Mars, we have to take geologists. These are the people who know what rocks to pick up. Now, he was a little short-sighted, didn't really understand all the advances we were going to make in robotics and things like that, but that's okay. And so I walked into my undergrad and said, I want to be a geologist. And from day one, I was a geology major. It was never a question of what I was going to do. And then when I finished up, I spent my senior year working at the Lunar and Planetary Institute, which is associated with NASA in Houston, did my senior thesis all about water rings in basins on Mars, if you want to know about that, and then went straight to grad school for lunar geology and really thought that this is what I was going to do for the rest of my life. And then I, A, met my husband, and B, decided I liked people too much to just sit in front of a computer all day, every day, and said, you know, maybe it's time for a switch. And so I walked away with my master's and went to work as an environmental consultant, cleaning up Superfund sites, and then eventually went back to school because I realized if I was going to do that for the rest of my life, I would rather write the regulations than read the regulations. So I went back to school. Ended up back at MIT, where you basically have 2 weeks at the beginning of the semester to find someone to pay for your education, lest you end up lots and lots of thousands of dollars in debt. And I actually ended up working for a group that was focused on process improvement, which is how I ended up in what I do today, which is a combination of organizational behavior and change management. Can you tell I've told that story multiple times before?
I mean, I feel like that's the podcast. Like.
And like, scene.
I mean, can we just talk about rocks? Like, I like for shit. I'm in. Like, I just watched a TikTok about.
He's an expert. Tell us about your TikTok.
No. I want validation here. This is not experts. I watched one TikTok, and there's maybe you know this. Please tell me I'm an idiot and that I shouldn't learn from TikTok. But there's a guy. I forget his last name's Green. And they posits that the moon is actually a remnant of our Earth and vice versa, and that there was a cataclysmic event that happened eons and eons ago, and that another planet, you know, crashed into our planet. And they're now discovering that some of the things in our mantle are actually the same exact rocks that are in the moon. Is that...
So
Jesse,
yeah, Josh, I hate
am I kind of
Josh, no, it's I hate fine. To disappoint Listen, you. I mean, he's actually correct.
Yes,
he is.
Wait, your TikTok feed is very different than mine, John.
Yeah, I scroll past the girls really quickly.
Oh my god!
And I
gosh,
go to the science.
Have more different TikTok feeds. Okay, all right. Okay, so, I'll go find that one.
For everyone out there listening, John is 100% correct. There was a protoplanet in between Mars and Earth that eventually crashed into the Earth. And for those of you on the video, I'm going to do a little something with my hands. For those of you who are not, I'll try to describe it. Basically, if you have Earth is your left fist and the other planet is your right fist crashed in at such an oblique angle. It's called, instead of kind of dead on, it was an oblique angle. And what happened was it went off, but because it was such an oblique angle, the original planet actually just kind of kept going. It didn't completely get destroyed. But what stayed got caught in what's called the accretion disk, I think.
Yep.
This idea
You're
that,
correct.
Thank you. This idea
Thanks
that
for validating
parts yeah. of... What was left kind of got caught in the Earth's gravitational field. So essentially we had rings like Saturn did for a little bit.
Yep.
And then over time, those coalesced gravitationally into what we know as the moon, which means that the moon is kind of a combination of that protoplanet and what popped out of the Earth when it got hit. And that's actually related to what I did my master's thesis on, which if anyone wants to go look it up, was a study of 7 particular lunar craters on the moon, where if you think about a pool of water, when you throw a stone into a pool of water, you kind of, it ripples out and you get this peak in the middle. Now, what happens on the moon when it's you're talking about millions of years and really different temperatures is that central peak can actually freeze. And so by studying through mass spectrometry what's going on in that lunar peak, you can tell what's on the inside of the moon. And that's how we know that a lot of those lunar those central peaks of lunar craters are made of olivine, which is a really cool ferrous green mineral. If you've ever been to the green sand beach in Hawaii, it's made of olivine. But olivine is one of the things that's absolutely in our mantle as well.
That's amazing. But how do you feel about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift?
I was going to say, does anyone want to know how many grams of protein I had for lunch?
How many splat points did you
I did not get a splat point today. I am trying to stay in the green zone training for my endurance. I'm trying to build endurance, so I do not want to spike my heart rate. So I did the 23 minutes at just like a almost like a base and a little bit higher than a base, John. Thank you for asking.
What are you training for?
I have a bunch of half marathons coming up. And then
Can you just combine it to one, just a full marathon?
I'm doing that for next year. Doing the 9+1 this year so I can run the New York City Marathon next year.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So I want to cheer you on for that. I can pull these two together, though.
Here we go. My proteins or the running?
I'm just curious. The running.
Okay, let's go.
So basically, when I walked away from geology and I started studying
here for this conversation.
Process improvement, right? Which process improvement really boils down to how do you change your behavior? How do you do something different? And I actually spent years studying runners and programs like Weight Watchers and Alcoholics Anonymous to really think about what is the human motivation that gets people to change how they behave. And that's exactly what I do now as a CSM. And what we all do as customer success professionals is we are trying to get people to change their behavior and do their work process a different way. So it all comes full circle, I promise.
I want to know why not everyone wants to exercise like me.
So yeah. I can't. Here's one.
I had a joke, but I held it in. Continue, Jess.
I hate exercising.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Hate
like all
hate
kinds.
It.
But
all
would you kinds. Consider walking exercise?
So yes, and the only reason I walk is because I have an under desk treadmill. And I walk because that little extra walking while I'm typing is enough to keep me concentrated and focused on what I'm doing. I have never gotten a dopamine high of any sort from exercise. It's a pain in the ass.
We need to play some pickleball.
Part of like even group sports and like maybe this is the ADHD in me. If I'm not good at something, I won't do it. So John, I remember stepping up to the baseline for my very first tennis lesson ever. And the coach said, you look like you're going to know what you're doing. And I swung and I missed completely. And that was it. Never, ever wanted to play tennis like, again.
What? So you walk away from anything you're not good at?
Yep. I
would not exist. If I walked away from everything I wasn't good at, I would do nothing.
No, but I also like, I get that a little bit as somebody who like also like struggles with, like, I don't ever want to be seen as somebody who doesn't know my shit. I do push into it a little bit, but I the counter to that is that you also lean really hard into what you are good at. And I think that sometimes people don't have that part and it's a sad part of life and they're like, oh, I just quit and they don't do anything. But to like kind of curry the first, 75 hours of this podcast already, you are very good at a ton of other stuff, right? So it's not like it's, I don't do anything. It's just, you know what? I'm good. I don't need to do that.
Yeah. And I love trying new things, which is how the taxidermy came about. And I've taken,
I want to know what a bad taxidermist looks like.
Oh, that is an Instagram.
I'm sure there's a Tumblr.
Super fun. My favorite these days. So I've only done little animals like squirrels and chipmunks, and I really want to graduate.
I'll get you some more.
But wow, there is a woman out there that makes white mice into strippers. Sorry if that's not like you have
Wait,
to
what?
Go and Google this.
They
Google
definitely
it right
also
now.
Feels like that would probably be in my TikTok or something. Like that feels right around the content I'd be consuming.
And by strippers, I really mean very classy pole dancers, which is a whole different world. But it is just
fascinating. There is a difference.
And there's
pole
a woman.
Dancing is very hard, actually.
Yeah. There's a woman who takes alligator bodies and takes their heads and puts them on like the old creepy dolls, which also just fascinating.
I am just in awe of you, Jess. This conversation is on when I don't know where this is going to go. I just want to sit like.
I don't think it needs to go anywhere. No. I think it's just, this but might not also, be a very linear conversation. It might just be a conversation that exists. It's just,
yeah,
it just has is. No direction. So, remember, not all that wander are lost.
And my favorite is, so there's a great book that I once read. Again, my brain does wander like this a lot. Mostly to the bad stuff, but that's a different topic that we can talk to. But there's a great book. I can't remember the title, but the author is Nir Eyal. He writes a lot about productivity. And one of my favorite sayings that I remind myself and people of all the time is wasted time is not wasted time if you plan to waste it. And that comes back to the idea of, Christy, that your brain is a muscle just like everything else. And you wouldn't do a 5-mile run followed by a 50-minute leg day. You would give yourself a break. And that break is not wasted. Your brain needs the same thing, especially when you're trying to adapt to new behaviors and learn a new way of working. You have to give yourself that time off as well.
Ooh, that's really good.
Well said.
Should we start our time off now? Like, I guess...
So Jess, you mentioned that what really intrigues you is organizational change. You've been a change agent in Slack and all these other organizations. What's coming into Update AI? What's the biggest organizational change that you'd like to see?
You don't want her to fire you live on the podcast, do you, Jess? Yeah. That's like awkward for everybody.
Our favorite thing is to bring on. We are going to bring on every Update AI employee and be like, what does Josh need to do differently?
Oh, I mean, I know I'm setting myself up here. This is like, she's got a whole ammunition for this.
Josh.
Let her speak.
The floor is yours.
So I'm going to tell a story of what happened last week, Josh, if that's okay. Josh and Christy Gaunt and I last week had an amazing 3-day on-site, off-site, whatever you want to call it. We locked ourselves in a room and did a lot of talking and a lot of brainstorming. And it was arguably one of the best weeks of my career. Like, I felt like I was being listened to. I felt like I was listening to exciting conversations. And we were actively making changes to the product. And in particular, towards the end of one day, when we were all a little bit tired and weren't really sure where we were going for dinner and all that stuff, Josh said, okay, one more topic before we walk out. We have to talk about these CCO club workshops. Here's what I've done in the past. Jess, you attended one of them. What do you think? How can we tweak this? Like, we don't want to put a lot of work into this, but how can we tweak it to just make it better for the next Boston event? And Josh, you want to share what I said?
No, I would like those words to come out of your own mouth.
I believe I said something along the lines of, Josh, do you want me to be honest? And he said, yes. And I said, Josh, that workshop was derivative and non-value adding to my life as a customer success manager.
And whoa! I did not enjoy it. And I did not enjoy it. And I would not recommend it to any friends.
Josh, I just came up with your new podcast title. Derivative. What's derivative? Josh Schachter's derivative.
Wait, Jess, should we ask Christy and John for their honest opinion? No, she didn't.
I feel like I had a very different experience. And I feel, how many did I do? I did.
No, Christy, just to be fair, Christy, you and Jess were at the same workshop.
Which one?
This is the one in New York.
But the one in New York.
Oh, the New York one. Okay, because there was New York, but then there was also, I did the San Francisco one too.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So like, I have perspective of two different groups that had also... I would say two different calibers of attendees.
Yes.
So can I preface it with
level,
that too?
Level of attendees.
Right. So correct, right? Like, so I felt like at the San Francisco group, I felt like I was amongst my peers, where I felt like New York had a very diverse group of folks at all different stages in their professional journey.
Beneath her.
I got more value. I did not say beneath me.
But Josh did.
But so I do think I took a lot, I took away more from the event in San Francisco, just because I felt like I was learning because I was with my peers who were similar experiences, solving same challenges. Whereas I felt like in New York, I was there to facilitate and enable conversation more than I was to like personally grow.
Yeah. Can I just add? So the funniest
way of saying derivative.
derivative. Okay.
The funniest part of this conversation
it's like Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Yeah.
Derivative.
So Christy Gaunt, our founding AE,
John, just Christine and I are having a different conversation.
We're like, we are a dinner table talking across each other. Yeah.
So Christy Gaunt, your founding AE.
She was sitting right between us, and she was like, it was like she was like first row at center court of a tennis match. And her head just goes back and forth, like just looking for reactions, for my reaction and for Jess's reaction. And she's like, oh man, Jess just threw down the gauntlet. But I have to tap myself on the back because I actually just smiled and I said, yes, like, thank you. Tell me more. Like, tell me more. I want to know why this sucked. And you know what? She's right. That, you know, the content had gotten stale. Jess is a different audience than everybody else. In case it isn't obvious yet, Jess is smarter than most. And everyone
on this podcast.
Yeah, at least in this quadrant here.
To her detriment.
And she has UX research and design thinking background professionally. She did that for Microsoft, which is like the top of its game. So for her, derivative is new for John Johnson. But
hey, as somebody who works in UX with Microsoft, let's back up a little bit.
Yeah. But she's right. And the outcome of it, by the way, like, is we sat there for 2 hours and just unpacked the whole thing. And we're doing one in Boston, March 6th. And like, we're blowing it up. And I'm so excited about what we're going to do in Boston because we completely rearranged it all. And it's going to be a freaking awesome event based on Jess looking at me in the eye and saying, eyes, I have two. You know, this wasn't fun.
And that is the reason I bring up this story, is to answer that question of what do I want to change? There is a lot that I want to change. But the awesome thing about Update AI is that I have found a set of people who get me, who want to listen to that. Even if Josh were to have said after that 2 hours, you know what, we're going to stick with the original plan, I would have been okay with that. Another one of my favorite concepts is this idea of disagree and commit. I want people to actively disagree with me, and I want them to actively talk to me. And so much of the rest of my career has been, hey, Jess, whatever, be quiet, you're disrupting things. And I feel like I've finally found a place where I don't get told to be quiet, which is really cool.
So I'm gonna poke a little bit of a poke and prod a little bit based on our first conversation like 2 years ago in a rainy backyard of New York City. I also have a similar personality trait where a lot of times I am told to be quiet and to sit down and like, oh, you know, why do you have to be the first person to talk? You're always speaking. You always have an opinion. And I'm putting a negative slant on it. And I also believe in assuming positive intent. So I know that may not always be what people intend. But, you know, we've talked about this in the past, and like where there's friction, there's also growth. But when you do, one of the things that I'm learning right now is when you do feel that empowerment to speak, how do you balance where that change or friction can be implemented? It can't always just be tear down. Like I said before, like, I actually really love that, like, Josh is the right audience for that feedback. And I love that. I don't think that I could have that feedback because I don't necessarily have like the analytical side. I'm very emotionally driven. So I'm just going to be like, you hurt my feelings and I didn't laugh enough. And maybe I didn't feel pretty, right? Like, that's the feedback. And it doesn't matter to Josh. Thank you. I know, I'm working on it. But really, like, I want to know your thought process around, you're coming into this new role. This is your first head of CS and community role. And I love this for you. But also, like, you're also going to learn like when to not hit the big red button that says you're fucked.
Yeah.
You know, like, talk to me about your thought process there. And you have the analytical mind. So I know you are in your head saying, I shouldn't have said that, or I should have said that, or you know,
analytical doesn't even begin to start to describe it. You also have to remember,
is anal retentive. That's what I get called.
So years and years ago, I had a mentor who said, Jess, what you see as passion, a lot of other people will see as aggression. And that really resonated with me. And that does come back to the idea of assuming positive intent and things like that. It is hard. And John, I have gotten it wrong so many times. And let's be honest, I got it wrong in my last job where, I hope no one from Watershed is listening, I was fired because I made engineers cry. That's what they
told me. That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. Now, I could, you know, defend myself by saying I'm 20 years older than a lot of these engineers who are coddled and entitled, or I'm a Jew from New York, and this is really how our speech patterns. There's research about this. Do not make me laugh. Go look up Deborah Tannen. This idea.
No, I mean, listen. I'm from Long Island. I'm all consuming. I'm on board.
This idea that, like, as children, especially Ashkenazi Jews in the tri-state area, are taught to question everything. That's part of our value. And it is not appreciated by everyone. It's also, you know, it's okay to have a conversation like this where four people are trying to interject and yell over each other. But I've also been in communities where that is super scary to people. And so, John, that's what I'm trying to get better at, is to figure out, when am I with my people? When am I not with my people? And if I am not with my people, how can I? It's going to take longer, right? The same feedback that I could give to Josh in one afternoon might take me a month to get through to other people. And it's the same thing for customer success, because see, I'm really smart and can bring all these things back. With customer success, all of us want to just tell our clients how to do something, right? Because it would be so simple if we would just say, go do X, Y, and Z, and you'll get the most out of the product. But we can't do that. We have to perform this magic of inception. We have to get them to realize it's their own idea, and then they go and put it in place. And we have to not be offended when they get the credit for taking that idea and running with it. So it's about finding your champions. It's about planting the seeds early and often.
Jess, why are you a customer success manager and now leader? How come you're not like the world's first female Jewish astronaut from Bayside, Queens? Like, what's drawn you to customer success?
What happened?
What happened along
the road? That's what he's asking. What happened in your life? How did that left turn?
Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah.
It's a variety of things, to be super honest. So if we start from, like I was saying before, I decided I really liked people, which meant I was never going to be an academic. I was never going to be a researcher full time. I was never going to be the person who just sat in a room and studied something forever. I will never forget the day I walked into my professor's office and said, hey, look at this really cool thing that I think I found in one of the craters. And she looked at me and said, that's interesting. Why don't you study it for 3 months and get back to me? And I'm like, no, I don't have that kind of patience. That's not going to work for me.
You want motion?
I do. Josh, by the way, made us all take the Gallup StrengthsFinder test recently, and we confirmed that one of my five strengths is the activator, which is I like to keep things moving forward. So I wasn't going to be a researcher. So once I left that, it was just kind of, well, where do I go next? And to be super honest, I've had a lot of weird quirks about my career that took me to different places, right? So Christy talks about her fascination with consulting. There is a lot of value to consulting.
Obsession.
I started my career as a change management consultant with IBM, and I might still be there. And this was literally 20 years ago, had my husband not gotten an offer to move to Copenhagen, Denmark, and I followed him. And so all of a sudden I found myself in a foreign country and I had to find a totally new job. And I found a job and I loved it. I was working for a shipping company. We were working on strategic projects. We were improving processes. I got to travel. I got to visit 40 countries in 5 years. Really taught me everything I know about how to communicate to people with different cultural languages in how they want to get something done. And then my husband was told that he was the most expensive and longest running expat for his company ever. And we had to leave the country. So I went back to Boston and had to say, okay, am I staying in logistics and going to try to do this? Or am I going to fall back on my change management skills? And I fell back on change management, mostly because there weren't any big shipping companies with offices in Boston. And since then, I've been chasing this dream of how do I get to be a person who actually changes people's behavior? And customer success is a really great way to do that.
Yeah, and you know, just to speak a little bit of, I really love the move from like research and even like design, like UX design into CS. So as everybody knows, I work for a company that builds like UXR and UXD platforms, right? To kind of power what people do on websites, how to make it easier. And we've actually been bringing in a lot of, if you've not seen, there's been a ton of layoffs in the research world, right? Just tons and tons of jobs are getting cut left and right. And we're actually hiring we just brought somebody else from like USAA as a researcher into the CS role. And there is a lot, there's a lot of like analogs between the two roles and a lot of those shared skills. So it's not really too big of a stretch for me. I love the background of consulting because it's, you know, project-based problem solving. And then you've got the research where it's like, I just got to listen to these people. I got to like really look at the data and like dig into what's happening, right?
Exactly. My job at Microsoft was basically to travel around the world and ask people what they didn't like about Microsoft Office, whether that be Outlook, Excel, Teams had just been launched the year before I was there. And I was brought in especially to work on a product that I think is now called Vega, Vista, something like that. But at the time it was Workplace Analytics, which is essentially, if you look at Google now and you know how it tracks how many hours you spend in meetings and things like that, it was a product that was supposed to do that. It was supposed to be a Fitbit for your calendar and stuff like that. And I really loved the job and I loved the product as a tool. I did not love the product as this like creepy policing thing that it became.
Right.
But through working on that product and working with CSMs at Microsoft, I said, hey, I could be the CSM. I could be that translator between the customer and product and try to help a customer change their behavior at the same time. I left Microsoft under not great circumstances again, because they don't accept the loudmouth ADHD Jew from New York as a way to talk. They have a very, very different culture and I didn't fit in there. And so when I got to New York, I said, okay, I got to find a new job. Slack was hiring for CSMs. I faked my way in and they hired me.
And that was your first CS role?
That was my first official CS role.
And how many years have you been in CS?
Officially. So now I've been in CS for about 5 years officially. So about two or so with Slack, two or so with Watershed, and now with Update AI.
So I want to talk about Slack because I remember specifically, I just really loved this conversation. When Josh and I first met, I was up in New York meeting some customers and he hosted a little happy hour. And I had just gotten, you know, some of these kind of awards. And he hosted me. It was a really cool moment to meet a bunch of folks that I didn't know in New York. And Jess was there and he made some great brisket and we got to meet his dog and it was really great. Like it was just a really good time. But you were at Slack at the time, and I think you were in the process of looking at Watershed or looking at a move.
Yep.
But we had probably one of the fieriest conversations about emojis in Slack that I've ever had. And we did not agree on anything.
Yep.
ever in that conversation. And I would love to hear if your perspective has changed in any way.
Whoa. You guys have to unpack that and like rewind, because what is it about emojis? What stance did you both take? I have a lot of strong opinions.
I'm going to share my reminder. I will say what I remember, and then I want Jess to be like, you're an idiot, John. This is what actually happened, because I am, like I said, I'm emotionally driven. So everything is tied to emotion. It is not tied to analytics. So we were talking about the way that Slack uses emojis as a form of communication, as in, instead of saying, hey, I got it, they put the eye emoji on it. Instead of saying this is done, they put the thumbs up, and like, it's a form of communication. And I hate that. Absolutely hate that shit. Like, just tell me that it's done. I don't know what a thumbs up mean. Like, there is no shared design language in our maybe in Slack. And this is where the friction came on. It's the checkbox. Yeah, that's right. The checkbox. No, but like, there is this thing where it's like, there is an internal language that was at Slack. And I felt like we were actually, what was more at friction was our perspectives on like personality, because you were coming from an inclusive environment where that is agreed. And mine, they just, a monkey covering their eyes. Like, I didn't see it. It's like, what does that even, like, I can't trust. There's no audit trail.
That's the one that John gets most often in response to Slack.
Yeah. No, it's the one that says it's a no.
Oh, I send the girl that's like, I don't know.
am I tracking well? Like, is that kind of what we're at?
Absolutely.
So my emotions are not lying to me.
No, they are not. And before I answer, I would love to hear Christy's opinion on those statements.
Oh, I hate Slack so much. I think it is ruining the entire universe. I can't get any work done. I think it's where all work goes to die. I think that it's a productivity killer. If I had to manage Slack all day and just all the conversations that were going on there, I literally wouldn't do my job. So I ignore it all day. I pay attention to the things that I think need my attention. And then half the things that are in there are in the abyss. And if someone needs to find me, they'll follow up.
Wait, hold on. Time out. I don't like it at all. I'm looking at it now
and it's making me nauseous.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. In this corner, we have Christy Falteruso, the queen of customer success.
If you say it, weighing in at any number, I will fight you. We are not weighing in at a number, so as long as we are excluding that.
Weighing in the other corner, we have the queen of Slack productivity, Jess Cohen. On your count. Fight.
No, I just don't like it. I just really don't enjoy anything about it. I miss like AOL Instant Messenger. This is just too much.
So, Christy, here's the interesting thing. I both disagree and wholeheartedly agree with you at the same time. And I think that those are not diametrically opposed viewpoints. And here's why. The tack that you're ending up taking out of spite of saying, I'm only going to pay attention to things that I'm mentioned in, is actually the advice that I give to everyone. Get used to letting go of everything else. We have this perception in our heads.
We're not trying to grow here, guys. All right. We're fighting. None of this. What is this? Like, hold
on. Is this
a
deeper issue?
Yes. You went into like change, like, listen, I'm going to validate you. It's a compliment sandwich.
No, Jess, he's just mad that that's not how you approach the conversation with him.
No. It's fine.
No, John totally ignored. Actually,
fine.
I hate to say it, John, you were kind of right too, because you did make me realize that exactly what you were talking about, that there are operational definitions that everyone has to be in on, right?
Right.
And I realized that it's Slack. They taught us that at day one, right? And so what did I do when I got to update AI, Josh?
You ran a Slack 101 workshop.
So can I say that? Like, I think organizations
So what you're saying is that if feedback that John gave you is in your current role.
That was a gross interruption right there. Okay, that was
intentional. I let him continue. But no, I think that there's a really valid point here. I don't think that companies really design a culture around Slack. And then you have employees who just use it haphazardly the way that they did at other companies or the way that they think it should be used. Or like, let's just be honest here. I don't know 90% of the functionality that Slack even has. Like, I don't even know how to do things in there except like respond. So if a company isn't designing a culture around how to use it and like creating rules and like regulation around it and like a governance around it, I think it's the experience that I'm having every time I use it, which is just
Christy,
like, oh my God, it's overwhelming. It's horrible.
Are you guys using it with your customers?
What?
Are you guys using it with your customers?
No. Isn't it what Fina does though? Like, isn't that the point
Fina's
of their
helping
product?
With that.
It's like,
we don't use it
because it's too much.
Imagine if
my customer was there, I'd have to ignore them too. Like, it would be horrible.
So
I'd
end
up ignoring my employees.
I think if you're not using it for customers with your customers,
then
you're behind the times. Jess?
So this is the really cool thing, because when this podcast comes out, by the time this comes out, y'all should go, anyone listening, go and check out my LinkedIn profile, because Slack turns 10 this week. And I have written a LinkedIn post that says Slack plus CS equals magic. And here are my tips for how, as a CS leader and an individual contributor, you can use Slack. And I even mentioned Thena, because I really think it fits really nicely together to manage your customer accounts. Look, there's a quote from Maya Angelou. You guys are getting all my good quotes today, that says, we teach people how to treat us. And that is true with customers in Slack. If you let someone treat Slack like an instant messenger, they're going to use it like an instant messenger.
Right.
If you treat it like a ticketing system or like an email system where you don't respond for 24 or 48 hours or whatever your SLA is with customers, that's okay. They'll get into that groove. And then it just becomes a better record of things. And I don't have to worry about CCing Josh on all of my emails. The history is there if he needs it. And anyone who is listening to this, if you want a lesson in Slack tips and tricks or Slack for CS, please call me. I will show you how you do it. I will show you how we're trying to integrate Update AI into Slack and more. I will show you how I'm using Athena, because even though my title is head of CS and community, what Josh doesn't say is he also gave me the support role, which is totally makes sense for starting out as CS. At the very beginning, startups at the stage of Update AI, CS and support, very intricately linked, working closely with our engineers to make sure it works. And the ability to triage these tickets and these concepts in Slack, it means that I learn every time an engineer answers something and I can answer it the next time.
Ooh, tell them what you did with the engineering. Tell them what you did with Kappa and the engineering sidekicks that you now brought on board.
Oh, this is something that I think I first learned about at Slack. And then we tried it at Watershed and it kind of worked. But this concept of an adoptive engineer. Christy or John, have you ever heard about this?
Nope.
No, but everybody in my school thought I was adopted. So I feel like...
Wonderful. I'll adopt you.
Thanks, Mom.
It's the idea that you usually think of an account team as the CSM plus the AE, maybe a renewals manager, an account manager. Those are the kind of standard folks that you would usually bring to meetings. And I asked Josh and our head of engineering, Richard, if I could assign some of our more junior engineers to an account so that they could see it from kickoff through renewal. It helps them build empathy. It helps them understand what customers are actually asking for, and it makes the customer feel special. The customer now gets to know that their product feedback, like, yeah, they could trust me to take it back to the engineer, but they also get the experience of talking directly to an engineer. And the engineer learns how to talk to a customer and how to say, hey, that's a great idea, but I don't have time to build it right now. I just think it's a win-win all around.
This isn't why they cried at the last spot, is it? The engineers?
Alas, no. That was okay, good. For different reasons.
That's good. No, I like that model. I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
And I'm not saying you could do it with every engineer. And I'm not saying, you know, it particularly works at Update AI because our engineers, while they focus on things functionally in different sprints, they're essentially full stack engineers. Right. So like if there was a back end engineer and a user just wanted to talk about front end design stuff, never going to be a great situation. But we have the flexibility in the smallness, and I hope you will have either Kappa or Jason on this podcast at some point to talk about what it's like.
I love that. Well, last question for me. What does success look like for you in this role? Like, let's look a year in the future, right? If we're going to go 12 months in the future and you know where the roadmap looks like, you know what your team looks like now, like what does success look like? How do you track your success as a head up right now?
So Josh would kill me if I didn't say that we have our Series A funding within a year. That's going to be success. That means that we've got something that people want. And then personally for me, it's that we have put out a product that I can't live without.
That's good.
A targeted user. I feel like in some ways walking into Update AI is like walking into my own personal IT company, where I get to say, here are the features I really think we should build. Here are the tweaks that I would make to how we're doing something. Here's how I would go to market. And Josh and Richard and Sergey and Christy and everyone on the team are saying, yeah, Jess, you've been doing this for 5 years in CS, 20 years in organizational behavior and change management. We understand where you're coming from and we're going to build it. Now they're not going to say yes to everything, but that if we can do that and then I can go out and sell that and then we have 100 customers that are actively using every piece of our product, that's success for me in a year.
That's awesome.
Well, on that,
I've used
every word that I know in my dialogue. Like this has been
No, listen, I mean, my comment is just that we're so thrilled to have Jess on the team. I've known Jess for a couple of years now, you know, actually the same amount of time that I've known you, Christy, and John. And when I found out she was available to join us, I just like immediately jumped out of my seat. I was so excited. I posted last week of like the top skills to look for in a head of CS, and she checks the box on all of them. I mean, her background in UX.
He also wrote the list after hiring.
Right.
Me, I did. Yeah, yeah. I reversed it. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Well, yeah. Wasn't going to give that one up. But structure. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's like.
Josh is getting. He's all.
Yeah.
I know what you're thinking, John. Josh, you want the structure or you don't want the structure?
No, I it's want like the structure
like
so
you're
bad.
You're so unstructured that it makes me nervous so to hear bad. How structured she is. Like, I'm panicked. Yeah.
So I actually think that's why Josh and I work well together, because I'm going to lean so far in the other direction and he's going to lean so far in one direction. And then we're going to meet in the middle and find something that works, which is great. Because it's so much better than what I've been told in the past, which is just go away. We're too soon for this. We're too early. People can't follow it. Don't worry. Josh lets me put that structure in place. And then if we walk away from it 5 days later, I'm okay with that. I know you didn't really mean that thumbs up, but it's there.
I'm sorry. The emoji.
Yeah, so that's the other strength that we came up with, that my top strength is an arranger. And so I now have a new alter ego that's called the Power Arranger. And so if anyone wants structure lessons also. And this is, like, no joke, 2 weeks ago was diagnosed with ADHD. I'm 47. Like, that's insane that I went my whole life without knowing that. But I now look at that and I can see, like, we think of people with ADHD as not being structured and not being organized. I developed that superpower because otherwise I would never get anything done. Hmm. Right. And so now it's kind of cool to be able to share that with other people.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us today. Thank you for sharing everything about your rich background. And we are looking forward to make your moonshot happen at Update AI.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. Yeah. Thank you, Josh. Thank you all for having me. This was a blast.
I'm going to go take my medication.